You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note on Wednesday. Neil Conan's going to be back at the museum in Washington. And this week, Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, is in St. Paul, where he's going to check in with the latest from the Republican convention. And if you're going to be in Washington, you want to join that audience there, get your free tickets to join that live broadcast of Talk of the Nation, send an email to tickets@npr.org. For the rest of the hour, a look at the high-energy world of particle physics. Scientists at CERN, the giant lab in Switzerland, are very excited. They just can't wait to fire up the Large Hadron Collider. That's a 17-mile in a big circle as a particle accelerator that will send bits of matter crashing into each other at speeds very close to the speed of light. And physicists are hoping that these crashes will help them sort of recreate the Big Bang on a very small scale of the universe so that they can get a better understanding of what our universe is made of and what it might have looked like back then 14 billion years ago. They're also hoping to catch a glimpse of what is talked about as the Higgs boson particle. They've never seen it. They hope to see it. And why do they want to see it? Well, Dan Hooper will tell us. He's an associate scientist at the Theoretical Astrophysics Group at Fermilab and an assistant professor at the University of Chicago. His new book is called Nature's Blueprint, Supersymmetry and the Search for a Unified Theory of Matter and Force. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Hooper.
Well, thanks for having me.
They're all very excited, aren't they?
You wouldn't believe it.
How exciting are they? Well, why is it so exciting? We've waited a long time for this.
Well, yeah, it's just such an enormous step forward in technology here. So we build accelerators and colliders because we want to manufacture new kinds of matter that we haven't been able to see before. And to do that, we need a lot of energy at one place and one time.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes down to the Einstein's E equals mc squared. If you want to create things with a lot of mass, you need a lot of energy. So what better way to put a lot of energy in one place at one time than to take protons or something like them and accelerate them to, in this case, 99.999999% of the speed of light and smash them into protons moving in the opposite direction. Hmm. That's the whole idea.
And then you come away with a particle that lasts maybe for a tiny fraction of a second?
Well, it depends what you make, and we don't know what we're going to make. You mentioned the Higgs boson. If we create Higgs bosons, they're gone in a flash of time, and we don't actually see the Higgs. We see the things that are left behind when that particle disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Other kinds of particles might exist, you know, for very long periods of time. They might even be stable and last forever.
Well, why do we want to see the Higgs boson?
Well, the Higgs plays a very special role in our understanding of nature's blueprint. We think that the Higgs boson is the reason that other particles have mass at all. And let me stop and explain what that means. So the idea is that if there were no Higgs boson, then certain particles would be completely massless, meaning they would travel at the speed of light and you could never slow them down. They'd be radiation and not really matter. But if we have something called the Higgs field, which is a background of these Higgs bosons popping in and out and frothing in this cosmic background, then those otherwise massless particles will feel this field and slow down and congeal and kind of form massive states. And we think that this Higgs boson that we're looking for is why particles have mass. It's a really important piece of this puzzle we're trying to solve.
What are the odds of finding this boson?
Well, I think in my book I said I bet 99-1 that the Higgs will be found at the LHC.
You're that positive?
I tend to be a little more optimistic than some of my colleagues, but yeah, I'm pretty sure the Higgs will be found, or something that does the same job of the Higgs.
Yeah. Now, what about proving or disproving theories of nature that were, you know, what kinds of theories will be tested here? Will string theory be tested here?
Well, some people like to say string theory would be tested, but I'm a little skeptical of that sort of claim. So usually when people say string theory will be tested, what they're really saying is that you'll see if something called supersymmetry exists at the scales that this experiment is probing. And supersymmetry is really only one part of string theory. It seems that you need it for string theory, but supersymmetry alone won't tell you string theory is right. It's a one-way arrow. Now, let me stop and say what supersymmetry is, because that's, I think, one of the most interesting things this machine will do. So let me back up and use a historical analogy. Back in the 1930s, Paul Dirac, the great physicist Paul Dirac, recognized that the equations of quantum physics said for every kind of matter that exists, there has to be an opposite form that he called antimatter, and we call antimatter. And he just saw this in the mathematics. A few years later, it showed up, and yes, in fact, electrons have things we call positrons, and protons have antiprotons. And there's a symmetry, fundamental symmetry, between all kinds of matter and antimatter. Well, supersymmetry is like that, but it posits a fundamental symmetry between the kinds of particles we know as bosons and other kinds of particles we call fermions. Fermions are matter, and bosons are the things that bring forces into being. According to supersymmetry, you can't have one without the other. Matter means force, and force means matter. Mm-hmm. If those particles exist, those super partners we haven't seen yet, it's very, very likely the LHC will see them for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And that will help unify all of the theories of nature?
Well, matter and force are two of the most fundamental ideas or concepts physicists use. This would be a way of connecting those and saying that they're not separate pieces but different sides of the same piece.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see happen?
If I could pick. Oh, I would pick something very wild. I would hope that we would discover something like an extra dimension of space.
Is that possible?
It is possible. I wouldn't say it's likely.
Yeah.
But we have very plausible theories that solve certain problems that involve space not having merely the three dimensions we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were extra dimensions of space, it would mean some kinds of matter presumably could travel through them. And say you're a three-dimensional observer like us, and we're looking at a particle that's only moving in an extra dimension. To us, it looks stationary, but it's actually moving with a great speed. Well, speed is just energy, and energy is just mass. So a particle moving in an extra dimension of space to us just looks like a very, very heavy version of a normal particle. So we're hoping to create these kinds of heavy particles we call Kluze-Klein states, and that would be evidence of extra dimensions existing.
Would it be possible to find dark matter?
Absolutely. That's one
How
of
would
the,
we know
the
it?
Most exciting things
yeah.
that we hope to do. We know that some 90% of the matter in the universe is this invisible, non-luminous thing we call dark matter. It's very possible for the first time we'll be able to manufacture particles of dark matter in a laboratory, the Large Hadron Collider, and study their properties in a controlled environment.
Any dark energy?
That's a harder nut to crack. Not only do I not think the Large Hadron Collider will tell us what dark energy is, but I wouldn't surprise me at all if I die without knowing what it is 50 years from now.
That is the really spooky part, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Knowing what that is. So when does this get fired up, and what will be the first experiments?
Well, it's September 10th, I believe, is the official day that they're going to turn on the beams. And this will be at a lower energy than its design, and not quite as many particles will travel through it, but it will start doing experiments. So I work at Fermilab, which is the kind of the American leading particle physics lab right now, and we're all going to have a pajama party there and stay up all night while they turn the machine on it in mm-hmm. Europe. And we're all looking forward to it immensely. And uh-huh. hopefully in the next few months, something surprising will show up. Maybe the next few years.
Let's get a phone call in from Jim in Janesville, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The question is what kind of safety precautions are being made? If I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds as though you're not sure exactly what's going to happen and what can be created. Are there some type of containment procedures that are going to take place so that, we don't create something that shouldn't have been or should be contained?
So there are very good reasons to think this machine is completely harmless, and that's an understatement. There's a bulletproof argument for why this machine's not going to be dangerous.
Because people talked about black holes being created also.
Sure, hopefully we will. That will be great if we create black holes, but they'll be harmless black holes. The reason we know that is because these sorts of collisions happen every second of every day. The particles from space are striking the Earth's atmosphere, and these are called cosmic rays. We've studied these in detail. They happen constantly. Those collisions are no different than the collisions that will go on at the LHC. The only thing that makes the LHC different is we can look at them more carefully and study them better. So if a black hole would be created at the LHC that would, say, destroy the Earth, it would have happened eons ago. from particles hitting the Earth's atmosphere, doing the same thing.
Is this collider going to make all the other ones, even your Fermilab one, obsolete?
Well, for the time being, the Fermilab accelerator will be running. But it will supersede that. And we're going to have to look in the United States and at Fermilab towards building a bigger and better machine down the road.
Well, there was that huge project, 15 years ago that got killed in Texas?
Yeah, the superconducting supercollider. Yeah, it's a shame that got shut down. But I'm optimistic for the future of American accelerator physics.
You think that the Americans will spring for that? What was $10 billion in those dollars, if I remember?
That's the right ballpark, yeah. But we're rather optimistic that down the road we're either going to be able to build something we call a linear collider or maybe even a more exotic machine we call a muon collider. I have my fingers crossed.
Would you be more surprised if you found something unusual or don't find anything?
I'd be shocked if we don't find something. It's just such an incredibly large step forward in the amount of energy we're going to be using and the amount of discovery potential, that if nothing exists there to be found, it would be beyond shocking.
And so how is there a long waiting list of scientists who want to make use of the machine?
Well, there are many thousands of scientists who are involved with the machine. And there are, many of them have their own pet projects, so they'll take the data and look for different things in it. Some people will be looking for Higgs bosons, some people will be looking for supersymmetry, some people will be looking for extra dimensions, and some people will be testing, less exotic ideas. Mm-hmm. And in the end, those thousands of people will come together and try to make the most out of that data set, that enormous data set.
Mm-hmm. And this is a giant ring underground between Switzerland and France?
That's right. It's mostly under Geneva, Switzerland, but it does cross the border into France. It's 17 miles in circumference. Around that ring, they shoot these protons around in bunches, and there are about 100 billion protons in each bunch. Mm-hmm. And it accelerates 30 million bunches a second. So this is billions of protons being injected every second. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing that not only can they accelerate these particles at these speeds, but then they can actually watch them happen. They measure the properties of 600 collisions a second. Hmm. Or no, I'm sorry, that's wrong. 600 million collisions a second.
Wow. Talking with Dan Hooper, author of Nature's Blueprint, Supersymmetry and the Search for a Unified Theory of Matter and Force, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. And talking about the Large Hadron Collider coming online. So the scientists are just there waiting for it to be turned on. Do you actually just flip a switch, or how does it work?
You might have to ask more of the engineering types. I'm a theoretical physicist. I just wait for them to tell me what they've discovered.
How far back in time can you go with this, to the beginnings, or how?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the idea is that the farther you go back in the history of our universe, the hotter it was, the smaller and hotter it was. And if you go back to the very first instant, then you have infinite density and temperature at time zero, the Big Bang. Well, we're going to be putting collisions together of particles that have about 14 tera electron volts of energy. This is at a point in time before there were atoms, before there were nuclei, before there were even protons and neutrons, where there were just quarks that made up the atoms itself. Mm. It's a very, very tiny fraction of a second.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, and good luck to you.
Thanks for having me on.
Dan Hooper, who is author of Nature's Blueprint, Supersymmetry, and the Search for a Unified Theory of Matter and Force, waiting for the activation of a Large Hadron Collider next month. We're going to now bring on our weekly feature. Flora Lichtman is here. Hi, Flora.
Hi.
She's our producer for digital media. And what have we got up on the Science Friday Pick of the Week this week?
It's actually this week is a 2-for-1 deal on the videos. So
It's what?
It's a 2-for-1.
A 2-for-1? Uh-huh. A double header, as we say in baseball?
Yes, a double header. Double feature. one is a directly related to this segment. It is an original rap music video about the Large Hadron Collider. I'm not kidding.
Really? Yeah. Someone made a music video about it?
Yeah, it's a PhD student in linguistics in the UK, and a science writer teamed up, and there are, there's dancing, hot beats, everything you'd expect in a rap, except that it's about the Large Hadron Collider.
You wouldn't think that people would get so excited about it, but the geeks out there, the scientists out there.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. And you can see it if you go to our website at sciencefriday.com, And you can look in the video section. It's the video pick of the week. And it runs for how long, about, did you say?
It'll run about a week.
It'll run about a week. And how long is the video itself?
The video itself is about 5 minutes.
5 minutes of the Large Hadron Collider rap music.
I mean, every minute you'll want to watch.
All right.
It's very entertaining.
And the second one?
And the second video is new research that's out this week about flies.
You mean those little buzzy things?
Yes.
What do you mean? What does it show, the research?
So this researcher at Caltech used super, super fast video cameras. And he watched flies, and he revealed with this footage why flies are hard to swat.
And you can watch this extra slow motion video.
Right. So you can watch this unbelievably graceful ballet that the fly does to basically avoid the swatter. So there's a lot going on. You think, okay, so
yeah.
Swat a fly, nothing. There's a lot of thinking going on the fly's end to avoid your swat.
And the fly has to take certain positions. And he does this really quickly, right?
Very fast. And in fact, you would never be able to know what's going on without these super high-speed cameras. So
wow. So you got the video from the guy who studies the flies.
Right.
And you can watch these, and you also get to see what the fly sees, sort of, as he flies through the.
Yeah, so they don't just do takeoff. This researcher has done lots of different studies on flies. So he looks at how they move, how they fly, and so he has lots of techniques and tools, devices for studying flies, including a fly flight simulator.
A fly.
This is a tongue twister.
A fly flight simulator. Well, that's interesting. Well, we're going to have to go to www.sciencefriday and look at the videos, Laura.
Yeah, check it out.
Thank you very much. That's about all the time we have for this hour of Science Friday. I'd like to thank everybody who was involved in the program today. Our program is produced by Christopher Intagliata, senior producer Ned Heiss. Charles Berquist is our director, and Flora is Flora Lichtman, our producer for digital media. Josh Rogerson is our technical director here at the controls in New York. And we had help today from folks in Second Life, Lynn Collins, Dave Andrews, and Jeff Corbin, and the University of Denver. Surf over to our website at Science Friday, where we have these videos, and also we have podcasts and blogs and all kinds of good stuff there. You can find your way into Second Life. And also, you can send us email the old-fashioned way, Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. And also, you can leave us email over there. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.